Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of July 6th through 13th. This week we're joined by Julie Irwin Zimmerman, the author of A Spiritual Companion to Infertility. Julie has an article in this issue entitled Science and the Path to Parenthood about infertility and the problems it poses for Catholics. Julie spoke to us from her home, where occasionally she was interrupted by her young child, but we began our conversation by talking about how infertility poses a spiritual crisis.
Well, I think that for many people of faith, they grow up with the belief that, especially when they get married, that, you know, having children is part of God's plan. I mean, I remember specifically during our wedding mass, the question, will you accept children willingly into your marriage? And there was just this great assumption that, you know, if you're of a certain age, that you will have children. And the fact that you might not be able to just, for a lot of people, creates a huge crisis. It's sort of bewildering to try to figure out, you know, you think you're cooperating in God's plan by trying to have children, and then all of a sudden you're having trouble doing that. And, you know, there's a lot of attention given to the medical aspects. You can go online and find so much information on the medical aspects of infertility. But I think for a lot of people, it really is a spiritual crisis. It's a question of, you know, maybe God doesn't want for me what I thought God wanted, and maybe God doesn't want for me what I really want, and what does that mean to have, for God's plan to be different than my plan, and how do we coordinate the two? Especially in this society, I think we're sort of brought up with the idea that if we work hard enough at anything, we can achieve it. And unlike maybe developing countries where crises are encountered at maybe a younger age, and I don't know, I think, you know, early 21st century Americans have this belief that they can really control their own destinies. And so for a lot of young adults trying to have a child and having trouble, it's the first time they've not been able to achieve something that they really wanted. And so I think that makes them reevaluate just the idea of God's plan.
Now, you write about your own personal journey and some of the difficulties you faced. How did that, this whole ordeal, it strengthen your faith in some ways, as you write about?
It did, because I felt like I came to know God much better. I mean, I appreciated the idea that I'm not in control, and I think I finally understood that. You know, I think we all pay lip service to the idea that we're not masters of our own fate, but until you're really confronted with the reality of that, it's still easy to believe that you can do anything you want. And so that the suffering and the spiritual growth, I think, that follows out of all suffering, whether it's, you know, a cancer diagnosis or a divorce, I mean, I think crisis can be incredibly spiritually enriching. And for me, I just found, you know, greater meaning in my marriage, in my relationship with friends who were very supportive. I gained a greater appreciation for the Catholic Church and for the great care that they give to, you know, their teachings on this and other matters. And I just, you know, there are days, and it's easy to say this now, that infertility is in the rearview mirror for me, but there are days when I miss it because did feel like it was weighted with such meaning, and I really felt very close to God and in this very intense relationship in a way that you do sometimes during great suffering and you don't when life's going your way.
Now, you mentioned the Catholic teaching on some of these issues. Some of it can be very technical and maybe a little off-putting or intimidating for the general kind of reader. How did you go about approaching it? Did you just do your own research?
I did my own research. I really tried to reach out to people within the church, you know, priests and family life ministers, but for for a lot of these people, they're so overwhelmed with the demands of ministering to people. And because the teachings are so technical, I just think, I don't know, that a lot of times the church's teaching is simplified far too much, and that there aren't enough representatives of the church who are able and willing to explain the teachings in a way that's both pastoral and faithful to the teachings. So I did find myself frustrated by the lack of information I could get from real people. Almost all my research was online, and you know, reading a document is no substitute for talking to a real live person.
Well, that's what you write about in your article for America, is about ways the church can offer more services to people facing these kind of decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, as you say, models that are out there. Maybe you could give an example.
Well, the Pope Paul VI Institute in Omaha, their work is really expanding, and they're doing a terrific job of teaching people that there are ways to combat infertility that are in harmony with the church's teachings. And, you know, I hope their work continues to flourish. There's a couple small ministries that have popped up. I think it's Elizabeth Ministries that does some work with the infertile. And I'd like to see a model like Project Rachel, which reaches out to the post-abortion community, as something similar to that for couples suffering from infertility. I think peer support is very important, and it's hard to, you know, to make those connections just sort of on your own. But I think, you know, meeting with a representative of the church, either, you know, an individual couple meeting with someone, or holding regular retreats and seminars where people can learn more about the church's teachings, would be helpful. I just think there's a whole lot of services that the church could be offering to people, because there's, you know, tens of thousands of people faced with these decisions every day, and there's a whole lot of pressure to avail yourself of every service that's available, and there's not a lot of attention given to, you know, what is the moral thing to do, and what are my alternatives.
You write about, in your article, a little bit about some of these issues that you can face. You know, the medical industry is such that there are a variety of options, and you're offered them. It's kind of hard to distinguish at that point for a couple what is the best way to go.
You know, doctors are rated on their success, and I think there is pressure to, you know, to sell couples on the most medically advanced technology. You know, there's money involved, there's success rates that are published that are involved, and I think so many couples go in sort of intimidated by doctors and also just so desperate to get this all over with. I mean, they want an answer, they want a baby as quickly as possible, and how are we going to, you know, just tell us what we need to do. And, you know, I think there ought to be another voice, not necessarily a voice in opposition, but another voice saying, you know, are you comfortable with this? What do you really believe? When do you believe life begins? What are you willing to do? What are you not willing to do? What sorts of limits are you willing to set? I think, you know, afterwards is not the time to be deciding that are uncomfortable with a procedure that you've just gone through.
Well, to talk specifics, I mean, there are some of the procedures that are probably the most used these days, something like in utero insemination, mm-hmm. in vitro fertilization, mm-hmm. These are probably some of the most common. Now, these are both practices that the church has spoken out against.
Yes.
Now, what advice would you offer to a couple who's, you know, as you write in your article, sitting in a doctor's office, being advised to pursue this sort of course of treatment?
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you offer them?
I would start with the question of, when do I believe life begins? And follow from there. If I believe life begins at conception, am I willing, you know, in vitro fertilization usually involves the death of several embryos, whether they just don't make it, you know, originally, whether they're frozen and then they die when being thawed. It's hard to get through a round of in vitro fertilization without some embryos expiring. So, you know, what do people believe the embryos are, and, you know, what decisions follow from that on treatment? The teaching against intrauterine insemination stems from the belief that conception ought to be a direct result of human intercourse, that human intercourse is a gift from God, and that a procedure in a doctor's office is not a substitute for that, and ought not to be, you know, the source of the creation of life, that you shouldn't involve the third person in the form of the doctor in that. And so I think, you know, an honest discussion with each other and with a representative of the church or a spiritual director about, you know, there are couples who find that notion antiquated or just out of touch with men in Rome shouldn't be making these decisions for these couples. But at least, you know, to give that conversation and that decision the time and energy and thought that it deserves, I think every couple ought to start with that. And just as, you know, a lot of people find it helpful to sit down and discuss how much money they're willing to spend on infertility treatments and set limits that way, I think, you know, it's at least as important and arguably a lot more important to decide what your moral limits are. You know, infertility treatment, I think, is just, you can get sucked in, and there's so many treatments available out there. And, you know, if it doesn't work here, well, then there's a clinic across the country that can probably help you, or one in Belgium. And you end up just chasing this thing that you want so badly. And it's just, it's hard to say no. And I think before couples get sucked in too far, it's helpful to decide when they would need to say no, and to stick to that if at all possible.
Now, one resource that couples can look to, obviously outside of their pastor, but is also scripture. And you, mm-hmm. your book is very helpful in, you know, pointing to some of these stories that we all know of, mm-hmm. you know, Sarah in the Old Testament, and women who were barren, and the challenges, and, you know, the incredible pain that caused. So mm-hmm. maybe in addition, maybe you could mention some other stories that people facing this issue could look to.
Yes, and it's always the women who are barren in the Bible.
Right.
No male infertility in the Bible. I find the story of Hannah just to be so wonderful, and I, you know, the mother of Samuel, and she, you know, she was at the temple so distraught that the high priest, you know, decided she must be drunk because she was flailing around so much. And she wanted a child so badly, and her husband said, "But aren't I enough?" And, you know, he just didn't understand her desire. And finally, her suffering was so great that she was promised a child and gave birth to Samuel and promised to raise him to love God. That one's my favorite. But I think Elizabeth is a great story, too, being pregnant with John the Baptist at the same time Mary is, and kind of just that story of Mary and Elizabeth meeting, both of them pregnant. I just love that image. And when you think of all Elizabeth had been through and all that Mary had been through, and their trust in God was rewarded.
You have also written some of your own prayers or looked to other
sources? I have.
Yeah.
Yes. And I tried to gather a variety of prayers from the Catholic Church, from other Christian denominations, and wrote my own, and tried to keep them, you know, in a variety of voices, sort of old-fashioned as well as contemporary, or traditional, I should say, as well as contemporary. And I just tried to capture, especially in the ones I wrote, the moments at which, you know, a fertility patient would feel like she needs God the most, and tried to put in words what someone might be feeling at that time.
Now, you have a chapter at the end on adoption, and this
yes.
is one of the alternatives that the Church offers, for example, in its
mm-hmm.
recent document, Donum Vitae, is something that Catholics could look into. You know, what are the challenges and also the opportunities that adoption offers in your
well,
experience?
Well, I am an adoptive mother, and so I've given birth once and I've adopted once, and they are both equally miraculous, and I think adoption is such a beautiful, life-giving option. I think sometimes it's frustrating, you know, people who are suffering from infertility hear a lot of times, well, why don't you just adopt? And I'd say that is bothersome on a couple levels. First of all, adoption is not easy. You know, I have had friends who have had adoptions disrupted, even though it's very, very rare, by a birth mother changing her mind. There is some considerable expense involved, although when you spend a lot of money on infertility treatments, there's no guarantee of success, whereas money spent towards an adoption, you know, almost every single time results in a new member of your family. So it's less risky that way, but it's not, you know, you snap your fingers and you've got a child. There's a lot of work involved. I also think that some people are simply uncomfortable with the idea of adoption, and nobody ought to be prodded into adopting. No child ought to be adopted by parents who are uncomfortable with the idea. And I think some people look at adoption as, you know, this act of charity, and you're saving a child, and it's not that at all. It's simply another way of building your family. And if you're going in uncomfortable with the idea, or if you're going in, you know, thinking that you're saving this child's life, you're probably better off not doing it.
You also talk about the isolation that a couple can face who are dealing with infertility. Mm-hmm. What kind of resources do you think the church can offer people in these circumstances?
I would say, you know, every parish seems to want the, you know, the couple with school-age children as members. And I think a lot of times just having parishes, and I'd say most dioceses have the parishes that are sort of known as singles or young professionals parishes, but using those parishes as a resource and a way to reach the infertile, because it's very uncomfortable for a lot of infertile couples to go to churches where there's a baptism every week, or, you know, the kids all leave to go to church school together. And so I think promoting alternative parishes or non-family-oriented parishes is a good idea.
Well, again, the book is A Spiritual Companion to Infertility, and the author is Julie Irwin Zibbern. We want to thank you very much, and we'll allow you to get back to your kids.
Okay, sorry about that.
We want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. I encourage you to look online this week, where we have a couple special features, including a slideshow from the life of Daniel Berrigan and his involvement with the peace movement that goes along with an article interview we have with Father Berrigan in this week's issue. Reminded that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.